to another Global Crossroads conversation with Chris Smith and the author Mo Tejani.
Global Crossroads, the book, and the chapter, Joggers Jamboree. My name's Chris Smith, Shambles Guru on the interweb, and I'm here with Mo Tejani. Mohazin Tejani. Did I pronounce that well?
Absolutely. It's getting better all the time.
It's taking me a long time, though, but I'm a special needs person. And with all of these longer conversations, I'm trying to get, for you, the listener, what I'm trying to do is not a pretty picture, but I'm trying to get into Mo's head.
It's quite big, you know.
The head is big. Is there a lot of space in it?
Yes. There's some empty spots that I'd like to fill up every once in a while, yeah. Well, I'm working on that.
Yeah, well, tell me some tips. My head's been full for a number of years now. And this chapter, Joggers Jamboree, is the fourth in the Culture Warp middle part of the book.
Yeah, the Culture Warp series, that's right.
Yes, and right. This is the fourth and final part of that series, is that right?
That's right, that's right.
Joggers Jamboree is a bit of an alliteration for a title. Is that right? That's what writers say, isn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely.
Why?
Writers use alliteration all the time because it makes the reader feel, it titillates the reader.
I never knew that.
Well, absolutely.
I should add that to my arsenal of titillations.
It sometimes borders on onomatopoeia, which is also a technique that writers use in terms of using words that sound like the action, like clash or crash, you know. Okay. To use a couple of examples.
Sorry about that, ladies and gentlemen. I'm letting him slip into his teacher's role. You can tell he was doing it.
didn't take much, did it?
Joggers Jamboree. As a heading, mm-hmm. Did you choose it just because of the alliteration, or did you choose that word jamboree for a specific reason?
Jamboree is also a term that we use quite a bit in Africa.
But in this chapter, why jamboree? What's behind the
because
story there?
Because if you think of how to describe the mayhem of 4 days of a global revelry of 7,000 people, from 174 countries in a stadium called the 700-year stadium here in Buddhist Chiang Mai. It has to be a jamboree.
A few listeners might not, well, actually, all the listeners now will know exactly what Hash House Harriers are because they've read the chapter.
Right, exactly.
What's your thoughts on the Hash House Harriers? Tell me something that's not in the chapter.
It goes without saying that if you have a situation like I try and portray in the beginning of the story of what is Chiang Mai, Buddhist Chiang Mai, Lhana culture Chiang Mai, a culture that prides itself in maintaining its heritage, a culture that prides itself in the Sanuk principle of having a good time, a culture that prides itself on not being emotionally vulnerable and therefore not exposing emotions too much. Put all that into context and then superimpose on that 7,000 drunkards with a running problem showing up for 4 days of absolute mayhem revelry while they're jogging up mountains and areas in Doisuthep and what have you. And you couldn't ask for a better cultural juxtaposition. So I felt strongly that I need to be there. Wiggled my way in by saying I really need to have a booth where I can sell some of my books. Mm-hmm. But the more important reason was to be in a place where there's 174 cultures coming together. Mm-hmm. Under the auspices of a lot of alcohol, a lot of food, a lot of dancing, and a lot of fun. What I also try to get into in the book is to show the juxtaposition that comes about with how the Thais view this crazy event taking place in their midst.
7,000 farangs, which you mentioned in an earlier conversation is the Thai word for foreigner.
Mm-hmm.
7,000
Not just Franks, Iranians and, you know, South Americans.
Oh, I think of those as Franks. Well, I think anybody that's not Thai.
In sense, foreigner, yes. But not necessarily just white. Yeah.
Yeah. If you're a Chiang Mai resident up here in North Thailand, it must have seemed very strange.
Well, this is what's so amazing. It was very strange, and yet, I won't give away what the ending punchline is. It's. They just accepted it as part of life.
Before this incident, you weren't a runner, were you?
No, and I don't think I'm much of a runner after either, to be honest.
But you dabbled, didn't you?
I did dabble.
Because in the chapter, you talk about some of the initiations and the dabbling and the...
Absolutely.
You know, and some of your assets got frozen, apparently. Is that right?
I was fascinated by the idea of having an event like this where people would come from all over the world just to go jog up a mountain and have quite a few beers and what have you with people from all over the world. Mm. I've always gravitated to events like this. You know, I went to the Olympics in 1978, to the World Soccer Cup in 1978 in Argentina. I was in 1976, I was at the Montreal Olympics.
Oh, I didn't know that. You never mentioned that before. Oh, yes.
That's also in my first book, The Chameleon Style, that whole incident, that whole trip. But so this was another opportunity to A, sell my books, B, get to know people from a lot of different cultures, including East Africa, where I grew up, because there was quite a few East Africans here at this event, and C, have the greatest time of my life for 4 days and maybe take 4 more weeks to recover.
East Africa have a great running reputation, don't they?
Oh, absolutely. The Kenyan runners.
They're always winning the Olympics, right? On the marathons.
They've dominated the 400 and the 800 meters races for a long time, and the Ethiopians.
Yeah, so not a surprise to see them at the event which involves running.
Well, in this case, it's somewhat of a different scenario because, you know, Stu, imagine this if you can. Ram Wong dancers, something you and I know as everyday life whenever there's a Loy Gatong festival in Thailand.
Describe them, though, for listeners who won't know.
Small, petite ladies with beautiful garlands of jasmine doing all kinds of Indian-type dancing to the beat of Thai music to Loy Gatong.
They're normally wearing a long sarong, aren't they?
Exactly, sarongs as well. Contrast that with big Maasai men with spears and Norsemen that look like Vikings and Merlin the Magician. All these people dressed in costumes coming to this crazy event. And you can imagine what kind of a reaction that would have generated from the Thai people. You know, where I had my booth for selling these books, I used the term just to keep in tune with their nicknames, and they use nicknames for participating in these hash events. I called myself the Chameleon Mojo.
Oh, I like that.
And I used, my booth was called, incidentally, Global Crossroads, which is also where the term comes from for the name of the book.
Is that where the book's name came from?
Absolutely.
Initially, that was where it was born.
Exactly.
So the book's name was born in a group of Hash House Harriers.
Exactly.
Drunken Hash House Harriers, that's where the name of the book came. Yep. Sorry about that. That may have burst the bubble for many listeners.
Well, there's a lot of crossroads and cross currents globally happening at that event, so it made sense to me. But right next to me was a booth for the Bangkok Adventist Hospital. And I wondered to myself, why hospital? And people said, well, a lot of people seem to get hurt because they've been drinking a lot and running all over the place and hurting themselves. So there's this nurse whose name is Noi, who's in the booth next to me. And somewhere along the revelry, one afternoon, she says to me, because I speak fluent Thai and I've been living here in Thailand for quite a while, she says, Mr. Mo, can you please explain to me?
Oh, they call you Mr. Mo.
Mr. Mo, or Kun Mo.
Okay, Kun Mo.
Can you please explain to me why would somebody spend all this money on an airfare ticket from different parts of the world just to come and run up mountains with beer in their hands? Don't they have mountains where they go, where they come from? Don't they have places to run? And don't they have beer? Why do they spend all this money? I felt at a loss for words for a change.
What?
It is very difficult to explain to a Thai person who hasn't really been exposed to in different parts of the world or been outside of Thailand why people jog, why they actually jog and half drunkenly, and certainly why they don't look like perfect athletes and they look like, you know, some of them quite obese and fun-loving, that's all. Thais understand the fun-loving principle, the Sanuk principle. It's an integral part of Thai culture. Mm-hmm. But all the other anomalies that come up, for example, you know, foreigners, when they're a little drunk, get a little touchy-feely, and they want to kiss the Thai girl, and they all run away in total panic.
Trust me, if a Hash House Harry came after me wanted to kiss me, I'd run away too.
Well, exactly. Exactly. And you know, comments that I talk about in the book at the at the feast that they provided. Everybody paid quite a bit of money to come to this festival, right? Do they have worms in this soup? comments like that, you know, that it borders on insensitivity, and yet because it's done in the aura of fun and revelry, it doesn't really come across as very offensive. But to see Ramwong girls, these teeny little girls, dancing with Maasai men to the beat of we will yes, rock you. I love those kind of situations. So
Hashers are pretty global people, though, aren't they? They're not parochial people. Most Hashers I've met.
Absolutely.
They are real global nomads themselves.
Absolutely, which is why they will gravitate to this kind of an event, right? And their costumes are quite amazing, quite original. I remember talking to an Estonian saying, you know, I asked him, why are you here? He said, oh, so that's very simple. Estonia, very homogenous, very boring. I need to be in Thailand. For the Hash Harry is from all over the world. Now, throwing in an Indian accent, he didn't speak with an Indian accent.
Yeah, that was interesting. So these Etonians have Indian accents, right?
Indian accent makes everything look very funny.
Yes.
What to do?
I'm completely confused by now. I'm completely confused. You seem to be attracted, because we touched on this earlier, you seem to be attractive to large groups of people. It's like a magnet. It started off in our first conversation with the World Cup in Argentina. It all started out there.
Right.
There's going to be a big group of people in South America. I want to be there.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Other events.
I've prided myself ever since Idi Amin kicked me out of my own country in learning how to be a global nomad. I don't want to belong to one culture. I don't want to know only one language. I don't want to have one home in one place. I want to have home everywhere and be part of every possible country I can be part of and be at events like this Hash Harriers.
You don't think it's simpler than that? You don't think it's just you're attracted like a magnet to big groups of people?
No, it's a sense. Actually, you know, if you look at it from a psychological point of view, it's a sense of belonging.
Oh,
all humans have a sense of belonging, a need for a sense of belonging. It just happens to be the mind is planetary, not cultural, not country-specific, but planetary. Only because we live in a time when the whole planet is accessible to us. And I need to make sure that I can maximize on that, resources permitting, funds permitting. So I make it a point to find ways to get to these events as best as I can. Just so I can...
So watch out, world. If there's a group of 10,000 or more people meeting together, you might have Mo suddenly turning up on the back of an elephant.
I've already set my eyes on 2014 in Rio de Janeiro for the World Soccer Cup, trying to gather enough funds to make a trip from Thailand.
Let me just interject here for a second. So if you are a potential sponsor... And
that's right. Feel free to donate.
And Mo would love it if he could fly business class all the way there from Thailand. And he's promised, because if you listen to the last two conversations ago, you'll know he's a keen T-shirt. He'll even wear your company's T-shirt, he's
absolutely
told me.
It's, absolutely.
So, but business class, please, right?
It goes without saying.
So the World Cup was where is that, in 2014?
In 2014, it's in Rio de Janeiro in Brazil, which is a place that I'd really like to go back to. And in 2013, there's another event called Kumbh Mela happening in India for those of you who want to make smaller donations.
Not so far to
which
fly.
Is in India, it's yes. Not far from Thailand.
Right.
It's a 16 to 18 million people gathering in a small town in India, all of whom have one simple objective, praying for humanity's salvation. You get all kinds of eclectic, eccentric people, sadhus, meditators, yogis, speakers.
I'm unfamiliar with the word sadhu.
Sadhu is a holy man.
Okay.
A holy man.
Yes.
I talk quite a bit about sadhus in the India story that we also did a podcast on. But this I've never been to one. I've seen videos of it. And I know friends that have been to it, and it sounds wonderfully chaotic.
15 million plus people at one meeting.
And you realize
over
that
how long is it? This must be
it goes on for close to a week.
The logistics of getting 15 million people.
And especially with Indian bureaucracy. So you can imagine. Chris, it's not a place. It's not the kind of place for somebody who is looking for a 5-star hotel. Okay, you camp out there. You see people doing amazing things. Like one fella that's on the video has had his hand up, reaching towards the sky for 12 years.
What?
He's never taken his hand down. That's perseverance. That's mental endurance. They call it spiritual. There's another fella.
And this is all part of this praying for the world salvation.
These are the kind of people that show up to this kind of, to this event. A Japanese woman who's been meditating for 20, 30 years of her life gets buried underground for 3.5 days meditating.
With a tube to breathe, presumably.
Nothing. Nothing. And she survives. Of course, there's some air in it,
yes.
When you go. She comes out 3.5 days later. This is in the video. Healthy as a horse. Drinks water. Don't need food yet. You know, there are many, many... If listeners are interested in this sort of stuff, they really need to look at the word... Google the word Kumbh, K-H-U-M-B, Mela, M-E-L-A. And you will see videos of this amazing event. And the next one is happening in January 2013.
Did happens you say every 4 years?
Every 12.
Every 12 years?
That's right. It's related to astrological signs and certain planetary alignments of it happening.
And it's always the same venue every time?
Yes, it's in a place called Allahabad in India.
So you want to go there, and that's in 2 years' time?
That's right.
2 years' time.
That's right, yeah. But to come back, you know, this is just a precursor, if you like, this event of the Hash Harriers is a precursor to getting to events like that. Whenever you have so many cultures together, you get clash, you get harmony, you get understanding, you get tolerance, you get empathy, you get disgust. The whole range of emotions kicks in. I like being in situations like that because it challenges you to reflect on yourself. Who are you? Where do you belong? And how do you make that belonging become a reality for yourself? So I think that's why I try and juxtapose the Thai perception of what's going on at this event and the foreigners that come there, their perception of A, Thailand, and B, that whole gathering of 7,000 people from 174 countries, you know?
Mm. I like your description at the beginning of what a Hash Harrier is, a runner is. It's I like your sort of drinker with a running problem.
Problem,
that's
exactly.
It's probably on their T-shirt.
Well, it's on their T-shirt, and it's also... ties in with one of the other stories that we've talked about in a previous podcast. Some of their T-shirts are fantastic.
Yes.
Very original.
Creative.
And very creative, you know. So I've actually went and bought a couple.
I hope Hash Harriers aren't listening to this because they might be upset with what I'm about to say. But I think most, if not all, Hashers that I've met and have as friends, they're all pretty smart people, actually.
Well, they're all pretty crazy enough to go to another place.
Doesn't mean you can't be smart and crazy at the same time. Yeah.
In fact, there's good chances that you are pretty smart because you know when to take off and spend some time having the time of your life, you know, at an event that you'll never forget.
Yes.
The other thing that's interesting, Chris, if I may add this, is every 2 years when they have this event, they also have an election. An election for deciding where the next event will be. In other words, it's not, to use to the examples that we talked about earlier, Olympics and the World Soccer Cup, where FIFA, the head of football organization, decides where the World Cup is going to be, or IOC decides where the Olympics are going to be. These are all the runners themselves vote on where the next hash would be. And every country that wants to host the hash has to do a presentation at the InterHash event of why should we go to Perth, or why should we go to Bali, or why should we go to Lima, Peru. And it's wonderful. You get a show of culture, you get a little bit of promotion about the place, and you get an idea of...
But are the promotions tongue-in-cheek humorous, or are the promotions corporate-type promotions?
Oh, no. They're not, very much tongue-in-cheek.
Yes.
I mean, for example, without giving too much away, the Australians, when they wanted to make their plea for having the hash, InterHash in Perth, by the way, they won. Wonderful, gorgeous ladies in bikinis running around, parading a fashion show of all the beautiful things that Perth has to offer. So it was not very corporate.
That's cheating.
That's sensationalism at its best.
That's, we know how hash's minds work.
Well, when they've had a few drinks, I'm sure that they thought, this sounds like a very good place to go.
Somebody else that knows how hash's minds work is a friend of both of us, and that's Stu Lloyd. Might be nice to mention Stu here, because he's written a book just about hashes, hasn't he?
That's right. It's called Hair of the Dog. Yeah. And it's all about the history of the hash harriers. Do you know where the movement originated?
I forgot.
In our backyard, Malaysia. Colonial fella decided at some point during the days of colonialism in Malaysia that he wanted to open up a group for joggers. And that's where it originally started from, at the officers' club in Kuala Lumpur. And it grew and it grew and it grew until it became a national movement within the country. And then it grew and it grew into Southeast Asia and then Asia and then eventually, over a period of 10, 15 years, all over the world. Stu talks about this. And what was even more interesting is, as you know, Stu is a good friend of you and me. That's the first time I met Stu Lloyd, also another writer, who had come to the Hash Festival just like me to sell his books, especially the book about the history of the Hair of the Dog.
Great name for a hash book, isn't it?
Exactly. And not only did we get along fine and we exchanged books, I gave him a book that I had been a ghostwriter for called Retiring in Thailand. And in that book I have a lot of personal interviews of people that have actually retired in Thailand, including Chiang Mai. And lo and behold, 2.5 years after the Hash Harriers event, who shows up at the Writers Club on a Friday evening in Chiang Mai? None other than Stu Lloyd. I said, what are you doing? He says, I moved here. It's all because of you. So it better be good. Another global nomad who makes decisions.
But don't believe everything Stu tells you. And if you're listening to this, Stu, we know you say that to everybody. It's the game's up.
Stu, this is Chris saying, not me. Huh? I just want to clarify.
So Google Stu Lloyd with the double L at the beginning, and he's not Welsh, he's Australian. Mo, I think you said there are a few quotes you'd like to make.
Oh, only because they're so funny, and I'm sure listeners would enjoy listening to some of them. You know, there's a part when I first come across this Hash Harriers event, I'm at a bar called the Relax Bar on the moat in Chiang Mai, and I see this sign that says Hash Harrier event, etc., etc., and pictures of everybody dressed in red and what have you. And I asked the receptionist, the bartender at the bar, saying, what's going on? She says, my Roo, I don't know, man who stick poster drunk. He wear a red dress and have sweaty long hair. And that's when I knew this juxtaposition is going to be perfect.
So that's what attracted you, was it? It was the sweaty men with red dresses.
Well,
and,
no, let's not go there. Hair,
right? The cat's out the bag. Oh, sorry, that was the last. That was the last chapter. It's the dog's out the bag, right? any others? Any other quotes from there that you'd like to mention? Actually, I've just got a horrible picture in my head after you saying that. I've got to get rid of that. It's.
Well, not so much a quote, because we've had quite a few quotes in many of our podcasts, but you know, this whole event culminates in the Loi Gatong Festival, which, as you well know, is a very wonderful, delightful event in Chiang Mai and all over Thailand, where they float.
November? It's about November
exactly,
time, isn't it?
Yes. Right around November. And they float lanterns into the rivers of Thailand. And in Chiang Mai especially, they float these helium lanterns that float into the sky.
But no helium, they're hot air.
Hot air ones.
Excuse
right.
me, I used to be a science teacher, ladies and gents. So I'll
as you can probably tell.
And before he says it, no, I'm not full of hot air, right?
The jury's out on that, by the way. But anyway, it's such a pretty sight.
It is a
and
nice.
Here I am thinking, what a nightmare. 7,000 people drunk, lighting up these hot air balloons, they're going to burn themselves. And of course, in typical Thai fashion, how is it organized? The Hash Harrier host is a Thai woman whose name is Imelda Marcos. Interesting juxtaposition.
No, this is a pseudonym, right?
It's a pseudonym, yeah, exactly.
I was worried a second.
Imelda, not the real Imelda Marcos. She wouldn't be there. But she had tons of volunteers, Thai volunteers, at each group making sure that these drunks don't burn themselves up. Music is going on three different stages. The Ramong dancing ladies are doing their thing. Reaches a fantastic climax with 7,000 lanterns floating into the sky. And I'm thinking to myself, what about the planes? The airplane. And she goes, oh, don't worry about that. We took care of that. We talked to the people in Chiang Mai aviation. We're fine for the evening. This is wonderful.
And that will be, it's fine for the evening, is maybe a good place to stop now, I think, unless I've missed anything. In the tradition now that we've developed, what questions should I ask? There's no, any more questions? Any more topics? No.
I think you should be asking, why should people come to Chiang Mai?
No, that's the tourist authority. I haven't actually sponsored this conversation.
They should, though.
I'm not going to ask us that. So this is the last in the Culture Warp stories.
That's right.
Is it a good story to finish on?
I like the fact that it's the last one only because it ends on a note of revelry, on a positive note of let's all enjoy ourselves by having all these cultures mixed together as opposed to clashing with each other, be it to the point of violence or war. It's positive. It celebrates diversity as opposed to highlighting differences and tension.
So that brings us to the end of Cultural Warp, and we now move into...
We now move into the third and the final section of the book, which is four different stories on all of them based in some form or another in Africa. And it's me reflecting back on what Africa means to me 30, 40 years later after having left the continent and the country that once used to be my home. So it's exile writing, if you like. And those three or four, the four stories talk about different aspects of Africa.
And the four stories, you actually have a term for that chapter, don't you?
I call it brain freeze.
An interesting term for brain free. You talked about Africa and freeze don't seem to go together.
There's an anomaly there, I understand that.
And maybe that's where we'll start the conversation.
Okay, and then leave it as a teaser.
Thanks very much.
Thank you.
This recording is one of the Global Crossroads Conversations with Chris Smith and the author Mo Tejani.